Sox! White Sox! Go, go,
go, go!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! Chicago is proud of you!
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
The baseball season rolling on White Sox Weekly with you. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Carmen. His name is Harry Tynowitz. We're with you for 2 hours today. Harry, you need a haircut for flat out. Let's just start there.
Oh, yeah. I definitely need a haircut. I need a hot bath, and I need a meal.
Hot bath is good. You know what I'm learning, Harry?
As I
age into my mid-40s here, and this is a tip for all baseball fans out there, perhaps even Chicago White Sox players, the key to life and maintaining the body is the heat and the ice. It's heat, it's ice. So you say warm bath. I think if heating yourself up before you go on a baseball field like the White Sox will do tonight, game three of the four-game set with the Texas Rangers, and then after they win the game tonight, after they get a great performance from Lucas Giolito, ice is huge. You get that inflammation out, 15 minutes of ice on that shoulder, on the knee, whatever's ailing you, and then you can move forward. That's the key to life. You ready? Heat and ice.
I would say the key to life is intimate conversations and being prepared. If you're prepared, ballplayers today have access to every batter, every pitcher that they're going to face. And if you're not going over that, I don't know what you're doing. You could be the greatest pitcher in the world, and you'll see the it's always like the best pitchers that are spending the time. I know the White Sox are way into it, and they have been for a while, and Renteria is way into it. You got to spend time learning the opposition, take advantage of that, because the guys that played, 20 years ago, they didn't have this kind of access.
Are you referencing something in particular here, Harry? Is there something that's bothering you that you want to get off your chest right now as we start out White Sox Weekly? Are you saying that there's a particular player that you feel is not as prepared as he could be?
No, I'm just saying in general. I'm saying players today, nothing bothers me, Carm. There's always, I take everything,
water off a duck's back.
Water off a duck's back.
That's you.
My shot glass is always half full. Okay, so I'm just saying that you have an opportunity now to do something that the guys never had a chance to do 20 years ago or 25 years ago, whatever technical year we start with. But the ability to study the pitchers, a guy comes up who you haven't seen, you used to get a scouting report, now you get to watch the guy throw.
Yeah, well, this is all true. There is more information out there and
video information. And I know we're going to have Joe Weil on, who's the voice of the Winston-Salem Dash, the High A White Sox affiliate, I can't wait to talk to him about Dylan Cease. But there's information and video about all these young guys.
Dylan Cease, a nice bounce back performance last night. 6 innings, struck out 6, did not allow any runs as the Dash got yet another victory. Joe Weil will be with us, as you mentioned, Harry, 4:05 today, and the Dash are going to be on NBC Sports Chicago 7 times.
How cool is that?
So, well, really, right now you've got the bulk of, they're spread out. Listen, you got Michael Kopech in AAA, you got Eloy Jimenez in AA, and you've got a ton in with the Dash as well, including Dylan Cease and Basabe.
Oh, Basabe is going to be good.
And a guy I want to mention in there, a little Tequan Forbes, not getting a ton of love, Harry, but he was traded to the Sox from the Rangers in the Miguel Gonzalez deal August 31 of last year. He's now up to .278, the batting average. The on-base percentage in is about .350. Here's a guy playing some third base. He's got 8 errors over at third, but I do want to ask Joe Weil about Tequan, because that's the type of steal trade that you love to see.
Oh, yeah.
And
then you got Gonzalez right back.
Right, right. That's a beauty. Bill Melton will be with us at 4:35.
One of the best. Who's better than Melty?
Melty, the White Sox celebrated Melty this month, earlier in the month, 50 years since he made his debut. So we'll talk to Melty at 4:35. Always love talking to Bill Melton, and always love talking to the White Sox director of scouting, Nick Hostetler, who will be with us at 5:05 today. Of course, the draft coming up here, June 4th through the 6th. The White Sox with the number 4 overall pick in the first round, and I'm sure they're very confident they're going to get players throughout the entire draft. I know the second round as well, and on down. So Nick will be with us. I'm sure he's going to tell us exactly who they're picking at 5:06.
I'm sure he will.
So you should be here.
He'll spill the beans.
So Rick Hahn spoke this week, Harry, as we get the show rolling here. And I thought it was a wide-ranging interview, as it normally is with when Rick Hahn sits down with the media. Mm-hmm. And a lot of ground was covered. And one thing that was asked was about frustration and what he's seeing with the club right now. And obviously the White Sox are not winning a lot of games right now. But he did mention, used the word sloppiness. So let's hear from the White Sox GM a little bit. This was Thursday before the ball game.
There's been at times where all of us, again, have been frustrated with sort of the sloppiness that has shown itself from time to time. Physical errors are going to happen. The mental errors are a little more difficult to stomach. I know that the preparation is still there. I know that the focus of the staff and the players is still headed the right, is still in the right direction. It's still in the right place. But it's certainly one thing that has been disappointing is that the crispness with which we played in Arizona, we weren't really able to carry into the season for whatever reason. And, you know, make excuses about weather or health or whatever. And maybe some of those are relevant to why we stagnated early. But we were playing good ball in Arizona. It was a crisp form of baseball. And it was a high-energy form of baseball. And it was a fundamentally sound form of baseball. And we haven't, for whatever reason, been able to carry that over on an everyday basis over the course of the season.
So for anyone who's sitting there thinking that this is exactly going according to plan and everything's okay with the White Sox sitting with the record of 11-30, clearly, I mean, the record is one thing, but it's also, I think, what Rick is watching every day, Harry, is how the ball club is playing. Are they giving themselves a chance to win? Are they beating themselves, which he hit on? And you're going to have more quote-unquote crispness when you have more talent, obviously. But there is something that I think that everybody around the club, Ricky Renteria, Rick Hahn, and the players, of course, themselves, all think that they're capable of doing more than they're doing right now.
There's been too many errors, and you know, you'd think that that would sort of take care of itself by now. It really hasn't. And you know, we've got a couple pitchers that are having trouble finding the plate.
Yeah.
Understatement.
Well, and the big news yesterday, of course, Carson Fulmer headed to AAA. Why don't we talk about that coming on back? And we've got some sound from Ricky Renteria, who, speaking about Carson and his future and going to AAA and giving himself a chance to breathe. We've got sound from last night, and Ricky actually spoke again today before the ball game. Andy Mazur out at Guaranteed Rate Field. So we'll hear a little bit of that coming on back here. The White Sox making a move in the rotation with Carson going down, Dylan Covey is up, Jose Rondon is here as well, Nicky Delmonico, we haven't touched on that, gets hit by a pitch yesterday. That
was going to miss a month.
Yeah, a month, so the White Sox with some options, what they're going to do in the outfield coming up. So we can discuss all that coming on back here. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
I told him that I didn't want him to lose sight of the fact that he has a great opportunity after this outing to learn a lot, to take it. Take a step back, slow it down a little bit, and think about the outing as it went today and see what things pro and con he could take from it and really be, you know, just evaluate it and that he'd be okay.
There you go, Ricky Renteria, White Sox manager, talking about the decision to send down Carson Fulmer. And just a rough night last night for Carson. It's been rough for a little while now, so hopefully he can go down to AAA and take a little of that pressure off and work on strike zone command. That's going to be, I think, number one. And go from there, really.
He was, as Ed Farmer says, all over the road. Three hits, five walks, two-hit batsman.
Yep.
And what, two wild pitches? I mean, you
forget
can't,
the wild pitches, but yeah.
And I was listening on the radio a lot last night, and DJ and Farmio kept talking about his body language. You know, you can't let it get to you.
Well, and you can't, but it's almost impossible for it not to get to you. I mean, you're right. Look, he's
All the greats get hammered. All the greats get shellacked. Okay, and the trick is, and it's one thing to say, you know, I think the closer is the most important guy to lose to have the the worst memory. You want your closer, if he gets beat, to be able to come back the next night and shut him down the ninth inning. But you know, you could just by the time I got home, Carson was out of the ballgame.
Well, but, last night, if you missed it, he pitched two innings, gave up three hits in two innings, but he can't find the plate. He walked five guys and eight runs all earned. Now he left with the bases loaded, right. And at that point, only, four runs?
He faced four batters in the third.
At that point, only five runs had scored, so he had given up five, and then... Chris Volstead was able to get the first two batters out, and then he gave up a grand slam on an 0-2 pitch to Shinsu Chu. The ball was up, and he cracked it. Yeah. So, but the bottom line is, two innings last night, three hits, eight runs, all earned. The start before that against the Cubs, 1 2/3, three hits, five runs, and he walked four in that one. He walked two against Minnesota, didn't make it out of the four, 3 2/3, seven hits, five runs, all earned. It was time. They absolutely had to make a move.
Right. And Nick Hostetler, who's going to join us later, was instrumental in selecting Carson Fulmer. So he'd be a very good guy to ask about, you know, what's the likelihood of Carson Fulmer coming back? Because, you know, when he came back last year, he was a different guy.
And let's hear from Ricky earlier today, just about 20 minutes ago out at the ballpark, out at Guaranteed Rate Field. This was a day later, talking about Carson Fulmer.
I spoke to him a little bit on the bench yesterday after I took him out, because you could tell he was frustrated. I mean, he felt like he wasn't doing what he needed to do. Then we spoke to him after, and when we made the move with him. Anybody, when you make that move with a player who was hoping and expecting to have success at the major leagues, it's tough receiving the message that, listen, you're going to have to continue to work going down. We reiterate, it's not the end of your career. This is simply a reboot. It's a reset. Ultimately, I think after the initial shock for any player, they settle down. They understand exactly what's going on. When you look at it logically and you look in the mirror and you see exactly what's happened or not happened for you, I think it's very easy to logically look at it and go, you know what, I do need to work on X, Y, and Z. He's got this is a good kid with a really positive attitude and a lot of confidence. I think he'll look in the mirror and go, you know what? Yeah, I got things I can work on. I'll settle in, get over this particular initial bump, and get to work. And those are the guys that end up giving themselves a chance to return sooner rather than later and actually have success. Absolutely.
Is it one of the issues, though, with a player like him, because he does have a lot of emotions, trying to learn how to harness them, to use them to help you instead of getting frustrated?
Yeah. I do think that he is an emotional person, but, you know, as I said last night, when you live in the world, as we all do, in the 24/7 scrutiny of every single thing you do, he's going to have a chance now to take a step back, allow that to kind of dissipate a little bit, and really just focus on what he's got to do. And he's probably going to also look in the mirror and go, you know what, I let the emotions get the best of me in certain situations. Now that I'm trying to take that out of the equation a little bit and be just a little bit more trusting of what I'm capable of doing and the work that I've done and bring it to the mound. You know, yesterday before he came into the game, I talked to Coop and he goes, God, he really looked good before the start. Obviously, it didn't evolve that way. But that's what you're talking about. Maybe right now just being able to settle down and not put so much pressure on himself, step away from it. He'll reboot, get a newer mindset, more experienced mindset. And once he starts to gain that true trust in what he's capable of doing, it might allow him just to settle in when he gets to the big leagues and just execute and do what he's capable of doing.
Is that something, what you're talking about, is that maybe was it too much for him to have to prove to everybody that he belonged here right now, when we saw him struggle in spring training as well?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that it was too much for him to handle, as much as he allowed it to maybe absorb him a little bit. I think he's capable of handling everything that's around him, but it's also a learned aspect of mental strength and emotional balance, you know, when you're trying to stay even keeled and stay truly focused on what you're able to control. Again, he's got some work to do. I think the guys have identified things that they want him to clean up. I think he'll take it in go down there, and if his personality, if we're correct in the way his personality and his makeup is, he'll go down there, go to work, and put himself and try to put himself on a good track to get back.
So there you go, a little bit of Ricky Renteria before the game talking about Carson Fulmer. What really hurts about it for me, I like Carson Fulmer as a guy. Everything that Ricky's saying right there, we've had him on White Sox Weekly
a bunch.
He's been
great.
He's an extremely likable, easygoing, yet competitive guy who right now just needs to work on his game, needs to get better. I mean, his last three starts, he's got an ERA of 20.86, which is not good. And opponents are hitting 382. They're the OPS, which is your batting average and your slugging, 1,463. You can't live. That's not going to work. So, I talking to everybody around the club, there was not one person there that didn't think that it was time for Carson to go down and get some time in the minors.
Right, and this is all part of the process. It doesn't mean he's not going to be a starting pitcher in the major leagues.
It might. It might. We'll see.
There's been a lot of guys, Carm, you know that, that have struggled and that have been sent down, and they come back up and they're totally different pitchers.
Sure. I'm not saying he can't do it, but it also could mean that maybe he's a reliever and he could come back as a starter, or there's also the chance that he goes down to AAA and doesn't do well, and then he's not back. Period. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the game.
Right. And that would be, obviously, being a high first round pick, that would be brutal.
That would be. It would absolutely would be. But there's no guarantees. He's got some significant work to do, I would say.
And Dylan Covey will get the starts until a healthy Carlos Rodon comes up here,
which is we've got Carlos Rodon news as well. We could do that coming on back here.
You are like a robot, man. Whatever I say, you're like the internet. Yeah, I'm going to start calling you Google, because whatever I bring up, you've got information on.
Hey, we gotta be ready to live this dream.
I love it, Google.
Thank you, Harry. I appreciate you and your 139th Preakness T-shirt that you're wearing, which was back, of course, in 2014. So that would does that make this the?
Oh God, here's that Iowa math coming into play.
15
at 4
16,
to 39.
17, 18. 139 plus 4. I believe that's 143. 143?
Oh man, you're Google.
I hear it's raining at the Preakness.
Raining. Have you seen the track? Is not muddy. It's soup.
Have you ever dove in a soupy track? Like, I saw videos today on Twitter of guys diving in the mud.
I've never dove.
Looks really fun.
I've never dove in the mud at the track, but you walk across the racetrack and the mud comes, splashes onto your face.
If you follow me on Instagram, by the way, TheCarm23, I just put up a video of Harry doing 5 push-ups. It's one of the greatest expeditions of push-up doing that I've ever seen.
Did you follow me working out for 2 years? Is that how you got to 5 push-ups?
Hey, you're a cardio guy. You're not a push-up guy, so that's a new thing
right,
for you.
Unless it's Orange Sherbert push-ups.
Visit participating Chicagoland area Great Clip salons by May 25th. Enter the Great Clip Summer Sweepstakes. The grand prize winner will throw out the first pitch at Mullet Night on Friday.
Mullet Night!
Friday, June 5th. You're on the verge of a mullet, by the way. If you continue going here, you're right there. You could be big on Mullet Night, June the 15th.
Think of how much Brent Sopel would appreciate that. Party in the front, business in front, party in the back.
Mullet Night, Friday, June 15th. Plus, there are White Sox tickets and a pregame patio party. Great clips. It's going to be great. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. One more little Ricky Renteria cut coming on back here, and then we'll talk to Joe Weil, voice of the Winston-Salem Dash, after the 4 o'clock news, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly continuing. Hey, Harry, you can bring your family of four to a White Sox game for as low as $49.
How can that be?
$49. Our family four-pack. You get four tickets. If you were doing four tickets, just for the four tickets for $49, that'd be $12.25 a ticket.
You're really pushing that your luck on that math thing, Google.
Yeah. Four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas. So that is one.
It's a great deal.
Upper level and lower level packages available. Check out all the available dates at whitesox.com/4packs today.
I wish I'd been out there Thursday. Nice eighth inning rally, White Sox. Put up a four spot in the eighth, why don't you?
Four spot, four pack, $49. All of it. Look at that. That's a beautiful thing.
And of course, number four retired for the White Sox, Luke Appling.
That's a beautiful thing, too. And we got good old number 1-4, Bill Melton, coming up at 4:35.
Yes, I believe he's the last person on the White Sox to wear 14, Carm.
Is that true?
I think there was a captain they had when they won the World Series, might have worn 14 also.
Oh.
Might have hit a grand slam in that big comeback win against the Astros at the Cell.
Was that game 2, Harry?
It was.
Was it a rainy, like 29 degree?
It was raining. It was a rainy night in Georgia and were you in the south side.
Were you?
I was left field bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
My old buddy Tom Sheridan hooked me up, and we were making some noise.
Did you buy a beer for me that night?
I might have bought a beer from you if I was kept away from the vodka.
Those were the days. All right, news coming up, and then we'll talk to Joel Weil, voice of the Winston-Salem Dash. What does Dylan Cease look like? How good is he? We'll find out in about, 7 minutes, 720 WGN.
The pitch is cranked high and deep to right field. Going back is Clark. He looks up. It's gone! A game-winning walk-off grand slam for Zach Collins, and Winston-Salem wins it 8-4. Zach Collins, who played in the All-Star Futures game on Sunday, comes back to Winston-Salem and delivers the walk-off hit here on Monday as Winston-Salem wins the series against the Carolina Mudcats 3-1. He gets showered with water from his teammates, mobbed.
That is the voice of Dave Weil.
Or Joe.
Did I say Dave?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's happening to me, but
you
it's all going down.
You went to college with Dave Weil.
I did go to college with
We're
Dave.
We're visiting with Joe Weil.
We're visiting. That's the voice of Joe Weil.
The hair on the back of my neck just stood on end. That was a call.
That was. Joe Weil, congratulations. Everything's turning up Joe Weil. Look at him. He's the voice of the Dash, and now he's going to be on NBC Sports Chicago. And 7 games. As we get to see the Dash live on TV right here in Chicago, which is a beautiful thing. And Joe, appreciate you taking time. Good afternoon. You are the man.
Well, I appreciate that. Dave Weil, Joe Weil, whatever you guys want to call me. I appreciate you guys having me on this afternoon.
It is most definitely our pleasure. So, hey, let's jump right to Dylan Cease last night. 6 innings, 6 strikeouts, only I gave up 2 hits. Is he going to be with you for all 7 of these games, or do you think that we're going to see a bump up for Dylan Cease at some point here? What are you watching on a nightly basis with this young flamethrower?
Yeah, if I'm a betting man, I would bet on him not being with us through the entire slate of these 7 TV games. I have him probably pegged coming up to AA Birmingham probably in the second half of the season. I mean, he's been electric when he's been on. He's had really 1 or 2 starts where that hasn't been the case, but otherwise he's been dominant. He goes out there with no-hit stuff each and every time he steps on the mound, and we've seen it so far from him this season. This was his 3rd time facing off against the Downeast Wood Ducks, which is the Rangers' high-A affiliate, and they had given him trouble in his first 2 starts. He got the best of them last night, though, with 6 really strong innings, allowing just 2 hits, and our pitching coach, Matt Zaleski, said it best. He said in the second at-bat of the game, when his breaking ball was working, he knew that Dylan was going to be on. And that's the pleasure of watching a guy like him. He's just so talented and really a good pickup by the White Sox in that trade last July for Jose Quintana.
And in his start before that, Joe, he threw 2 innings, gave up 9 hits, 7 earned, walked 2. It was his worst start of the year. What happened between that start and last night, and what was the difference?
I think it was just execution. That's really what it came down to. And Matt Zaleski, the pitching coach for the Dash, he said that they had the same game plan, and it was just all about locating this time. And if you look back at the video for that last start against Down East before the one yesterday, he left a lot of fastballs up, and they're a really good hitting team for a minor league ball club, and they were able to just barrel up a lot of those baseballs. Yesterday, Dylan was working it really well on both sides, mixing up his pitches extremely well. He's starting to use his changeup more than he did at the beginning of the year, and last night he used it to perfection along with that curveball, and it's really that secondary stuff that you're seeing him develop even more this year, and that's why you've seen the results that he's gotten, and that's why you see the improvement from the start, that pass one against the Wood Ducks in which he gave up 8 runs and 7 earned, to last night where he just went out there and shoved.
Hey, I want to barrel up here with a decent question for you. Tell us about Basabe. Luis Basabe looks like he could be a keeper for the White Sox.
Yeah, he's been incredible for us, and I think what we're starting to see is what Rick Hahn and company saw when they acquired him for Chris Sale. And I said this earlier to somebody else, but if you look at the totality of that trade too, with Moncada, you know, he's at the big league level right now. Kopech is waiting in the wings, and then you have Vasabe. That could end up being a really huge trade for the White Sox 2 or 3 years down the line. And right now, he looks like he could become that 2020 guy at the big leagues that White Sox fans are hoping. He's healthy. Last year, he was not healthy. He had a knee injury, and he was playing through it throughout the entire campaign, and that's why the numbers were down. He's back at the high level. He's been dominating since the start. He was cooling off a little bit in the month of May, but he goes 3 for 5 yesterday, and I have no doubts he'll get back on track. And it's funny, people keep talking about our outfield and all the talented prospects we have with him and Blake Rutherford and Adolfo and Alex Call and then Joel Booker, too. I mean, he probably is the most logical guy to be bumped up to the next level once Luis Robert comes on a roster. I don't know that for certain. That's just a guess for myself. But, I mean, he's been really impressive. And another great piece of that Chris Sale deal that, yeah, it hurts right now because you see Sale pitching well for the Red Sox. But, I mean, you get him, you get Kopech, you get and then you have Moncada already. I think that could be a trade that you see pay huge dividends as the White Sox try to build a contender in the upcoming years.
Joel Weil is the voice of the Winston-Salem Dash. You can get every Winston-Salem telecast at NBC Sports Chicago. They're streamed at nbcsportschicago.com/watch live. Joe, you mentioned a ton of players there. Let's rewind back to Blake Rutherford, who right now is leading the Dash with his batting average at .318, and he came over from the Yankees, first-round pick 2016. And I've heard a lot of people talking about Blake Rutherford around the White Sox right now. They're very high on Blake. What do you like about the left-handed hitter?
Yeah, he just is. He's comfortable at the plate, and I think what happened last year was, you know, he was a young kid who got traded over from the team that he grew up loving, you know, as a child, and I think that played a lot into the struggles he had with Low A Kannapolis after being traded over to the White Sox, and he's talked about how kind of he let at-bats lead into games and everything just carried over when things weren't going well. What he's doing this year is if he does have a bad game, he's taking it into the clubhouse, digesting it, but then as soon as he leaves, it's gone, and then he comes back fresh the next day. And he said that that's been huge for him. Also, he worked out with Christian Yelich in the offseason too, and that played a big role in terms of his development and in terms of not being too focused on the home runs. And I think a lot of people, you know, I've been asking, you know, where's the power with him? He does have 3 home runs, but for Blake, what's most important in his mind is the fact that he's hitting the ball hard. And that's something that Christian Yelich preached to him. And you're seeing it right now. He's currently 4th in the Carolina League in batting average with a .318 mark. He's tops on the Dash in RBIs with 30. He's done a great job spraying the ball all over the field. And I'll say this about Blake, too. He doesn't look fooled all that often at the plate. He does a good job tracking pitches and not chasing bad ones. Sure, it still happens from time to time, and that's why he's still in the minor leagues right now at the high level. But he's been really impressive at the plate. Someone who seems really in control of what's going on. He's done a good job just with the bat and gaining hits and helping out this Winston-Salem offense. But he's been really impressive. And once again, another trade piece that White Sox fans can be excited to watch come through the minor league ranks. There's so many outfield prospects to watch, and he's just one of them.
If you're falling in love with the voice of Joel Weil, you can listen to him call all the Dash games at ws-.com/broadcast. All 140 Dash games right there. One more thing on Blake Rutherford. He also has 3 triples, 8 doubles. You love that. I'm curious about the split, though, lefties versus righties. He's hitting .143 versus left-handers, Joe. Do you see that as a small sample size, or is that something that's real that he's got to get better at?
Well, I think it's something that he still has to continue to improve upon, and that's what the minor leagues are all about. It's just all about development and kind of working on that type or those types of things. You know, you look at that, obviously, you see that statistic, and it's clearly something he has to improve upon. But at the same time, you know, he's still 21 years old, and he's still learning a new level. He hadn't played at the high level before coming into this season, and you look at the totality of what he has brought so far this year, and you can't help but be impressed. And that's what's fun about watching these prospects, because you see the tantalizing talent, And then at the same time, you see stuff that they can all improve upon. And I'll bring up another example. Guy Mike Rodolfo, he's been so impressive to watch at the plate, but you still see him swinging at pitches he probably shouldn't be swinging at. But he's still putting up the numbers. So you see these guys putting up great numbers and then also a couple of holes that they need to work on in their approach. But you look at the overall magnitude of what they're bringing each and every day, it's been really impressive. And I think that it just bodes well for the White Sox when you look at their future, that you have these guys who are putting up good numbers in the minor leagues, but also they have some things that they can still work on to get better.
May, your timing is, you know, almost perfect to be with the Winston-Salem Dash, because all
I
these
got pretty lucky.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's an influx of talent just when you're there, and maybe you guys will all hit the bigs together. But yeah, Mike Rodolfo, he was a Player of the Month guy. So, I mean, and I know he can hit the ball deep. What does he need to do to get to the next level?
I think it's just continue to refine his approach. And I'll say two things. I'll say that in terms of just not chasing pitches out of the zone. Dash hitting coach Charlie Poe has raved about the job that Rodolfo has done in terms of getting better at not swinging at those pitches. But even with that, I think he can still improve upon not chasing balls out of the zone. The second thing, and this is sort of something that has luck play into it, but it's also staying healthy. The White Sox signed Miker as a 16-year-old for $1.6 billion out of the Dominican Republic. In the first couple seasons in the minor leagues, he was dealing with various injuries. And even this year, he's dealing with an injury. He's just DHing for us because he hurt his right elbow, which is his throwing elbow. So he's not allowed to play in the outfield. They're just having him DH with us right now. So I think the big thing for Miker is just making sure that he stays healthy throughout his time here in the minor leagues and just continuing to refine his approach at the plate and making sure that he's still a little bit more selective when it comes to going after pitches. It's improved a lot since he's first come into the minor leagues with the White Sox, but I think it could, you could still see even more improvement when it comes to that.
Yeah, he's got the most strikeouts on the team at 46, but he's also got it on base at 400, Harry. So that's
and he's from San Pedro de Marcos, which is like the size of Highland Park, and they have 17,000 ball players that have come out of there.
Huge.
That's right.
Hey, Joe, what? Tell me about Omar Vizquel managing this team. What's he like?
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. I'm smiling as I say this right now. I mean, he's been so great with this group. He's been great with the fans in Winston-Salem. He couldn't have a better attitude about being here in the minor leagues after spending 24 seasons playing in the big leagues and then coaching with the Tigers for 4 years. It's been an adjustment for Omar because he was in that lifestyle for so long, and he wanted to get a big league job, and he didn't get it with the Detroit Tigers when he interviewed for him. But this is something that Omar has wanted to do since his playing days. He wrote a book when he was with the Cleveland Indians, and even in that book, he talked about how he wanted to be a manager in the big leagues when he was done playing. So this is just one of those steps. And I think also, yes, he's in the minor leagues, but he's with a team that has so much talent and at a really important time with the White Sox. So I think it's a perfect job for him to step into this realm. And he's learning, too. I mean, he's learning just kind of the little nuanced things that come with managing in terms of setting up BP times, infield times as well. But the players love playing for him. He keeps everything really loose, and at the same time, he's there to tell them when they need to improve on things. And because it's Omar Vizquel, they listen to it. It's really interesting hearing the infielders on this team just talk about what it's like to work with Omar, because they grew up playing positions similar to what Omar played in the big leagues, and they're sort of in awe of just what they're doing right now, and that's working with a guy that won 11 gold gloves in the major leagues. But Omar's been great with this group. He's been great just in terms of every facet of what you could ask for in a manager, and I think he really will be a manager in the big leagues at some point soon. He's got all the skills to do that. He's a great communicator. It helps that he speaks fluent English and Spanish as well, and that helps gel the personalities on this team. I'll say nothing but great things about Omar because he's been spectacular with us.
Joe, you know, the your journey personally, you are doing what it takes to get to be a broadcaster, whether you end up with the NFL or Voice of the White Sox or wherever you go. You know, you've gotten a gig right away, and you happen, like we talked about earlier in the interview, it's with, you know, a very exciting, you know, team with a great minor league organization. But what's the longest bus ride you have been on so far in your young career?
It goes from Winston-Salem to Wilmington. It's about 7.5 hours. Not the best ride, and it's funny. Actually, so this is my third year with the team, and I was the number two broadcaster the first 2 years, and we took it after a night game, and I believe it was an extra inning game as well. So the game ended at, I think it was 11 o'clock, and then we take this 7.5 hour bus ride from Wilmington, Delaware to Winston-Salem. So we roll in at I think it was 6:30 or something like that, and you know, everyone's completely exhausted. It was also my first road trip, so I forgot to bring a pillow with me. So I was rookie mistake,
exactly. Joe.
So I was head on the window, you know, trying to fall asleep, and but I couldn't do it. So I was exhausted when we rolled in. We're actually pretty fortunate in the Carolina League that that's the worst it gets, because I've heard stories of 14-hour bus rides, 8 hours. You know what? It you just have to wear it when it happens. But compared to what it could be, I'll certainly take it.
Is that like row 7 on the bus? I love the bus. I'm a huge fan of a good bus ride. Uh-huh. You get on.
By the way, in England, they call it the coach.
You don't have to. You know, you have nothing to do other than be on your phone, take a nap, have a little. You're going to stop at the gas station, get yourself a little snack. It's a beautiful thing.
Buses suck.
I have no sympathy for young Joe or even Omar being in the big leagues. 24 could you know, perhaps end up in the Hall of Fame. That's a little bit different. But for young Joe, you should cherish every moment on that bus, Joe. That's from me to you.
Oh, no, and I certainly do.
See?
And it is fun to see the coaches and players yell at each other and interact with them. And listen, I the thing is, on most trips, unless my broadcast assistant comes with me, I get a full row. So I get to stretch the legs out and get to chill out. So it's not too bad.
It's a beautiful thing. Joe, thanks for taking time, man. And we covered about half the things we wanted to talk about here. So we'll do it again soon. And I know the Dash got rained out today, right? You guys got a doubleheader tomorrow with Down East?
Yes, that's exactly right. It starts at 2 p.m.
Oh, man. Down East. Saturday night in Winston-Salem.
Yes.
Oh, partay.
Well, they're at Down East. Where is Down East, Joe?
So Down East is in Kinston, North Carolina. It's actually one of the smaller cities in the minor league, so it's going to be a really, really crazy night for me.
We talking Ruby Tuesdays. We going with what do we got? What are our options here?
So we got Subway, and actually Waffle House is close by. So I think it's going to be one of the two here for dinner.
Dude, you're going to meet so many quality women at the Waffle House.
You got to find an Applebee's. There's got to be feeling good in the neighborhood. Come on, well, give me a Chili's. I love the road. I love those places.
I used to love Ponderosa. You get 5 different starches on your plate at the same time.
Get the chocolate chip waffle. It's a great look, Joe. Appreciate your time, and look forward to hearing you on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Joe Wild, voice of the Winston-Salem Dash. Look at you. He won't take a bus ride. It's a great look.
I didn't say I won't take one. I'm just not a fan of them. I don't get fired up to take a bus ride like you.
Me and you, let's go hound to California and just bond. We'll bond.
I would drive. I love driving.
I'd like to get on the hound with you. All right, quick timeout. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Bill Melton coming up. Head to the park for $1 Vienna Beef Hot Dogs every Wednesday home game this season. You can take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, May 23rd. That'd be this coming Wednesday, as the Sox take on the Baltimore Orioles at 7:10 p.m. Get your tickets at whitesox.com today.
Hey, don't forget to come out to the park Friday, June 1st for Rock and Roll Night and fireworks presented by Guaranteed Rate as the Chicago White Sox host the Milwaukee Brewers. It's a border war. Starts at 7:10 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com.
So we're in a different booth out at Guaranteed Rate this weekend because the Texas Rangers are here and they travel a Spanish broadcasting team, which is awesome. So I was hanging out with Ed and DJ last night. Ribs, chicken, apple pie.
The Bertucci brothers?
The Bertucci. I mean, it's unbelievable how much food is in there. So I've never eaten more food at Guaranteed Rate Field than I did last night, and I was like basically starving myself today, and then you brought in the sweet rolls. So I blame you.
I couldn't believe.
It's my own fault. I have my own. I make my own decisions. I'm going to take that back. My apologies. Thank you for bringing the sweet rolls.
My pleasure. Happy to share. You're always very generous to me. You know, Carm, that game it was like at the top of the third inning, and it was like 10:30 last night.
It was a slog. There's no doubt about it. All right, coming up after the 4:30 news, Bill Melton. Melty will be with us straight ahead. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
All right. Been looking forward to this all day, actually, since last night when I saw him wandering around Guaranteed Rate Field hoping for the ball game to end, which I think everybody was doing last night at Guaranteed Rate Field. Belton, Bill Melton, good old number 14, 50 years since his debut this month with the Chicago White Sox. Bill, we are sponsoring our text question today. Our text question is sponsored by CJ Wilson Mazda and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. The text question for you at 312-981-7200. Please text us. Who is your favorite White Sox third baseman of all time? Is it A, Bill Melton, B, Joe Creedy, C, Robin Ventura, D, Vance Law, E, Yolmer Sanchez, F, Matt Davidson, G, Herbert Perry, Harry? You want to throw more out there?
We could be out here all night, but it stops with your first answer. Belton, Bill Melton, who won the home run title on the last day, destroying Reggie Jackson. Melty, it's been too long. How the hell are you?
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think it's going to be Ventura because he's been the most current. That's kind of where it always winds up. I've been out of here. You just said it about 50 years, I guess. I didn't realize that, but... It's been that long since my first at-bat. Harry, how are you doing?
Emotionally, I'm sort of living a lie, but other than that, I'm great. I'm better whenever I talk to you. I enjoy you and Chuck Garfine.
Just the way I left you 20 years ago.
Yes, it is the way you left me 20 years ago. Melty, you've been on all kinds of teams. You've been on a few terrific teams. You've been on some teams that have been near the bottom of the standings. How do you think that the guys are coming out of the clubhouse every night knowing that this is a rebuilding plan, that they're not going to win an awful lot of ball games this season?
Well, if I have to reach back a little bit, we had the same thing happen in 1969, but, you know, when you get Carlos May, Bucky Dent, Gossage, Forster, all us young guys, that was my first full year. It was a pretty bad team, but then you always have hope, but the difference is now you can go out after a year and you play really bad for a year or two and you got some prospects. You can go into a free agent market. Back then, you couldn't. You actually had to make trades. So it was a little bit tougher. So you had to do more development in your minor league system, and you had to make sure that those guys came up because it was difficult to make trades when you're a bad team. You don't have that many players. We were really young. But now I think, if you can get a core of players, a small core of players, that you can go in the free agent market and you can actually put a pretty good ball club together pretty quick.
Oh yeah, and that core is coming. I mean, that core will be here before we know it. That core will be here shortly, and it looks to be a pretty strong core. How do you get fired up, Melty? You've been there for playoff teams. You've been there for all kinds of different things. When you look at the young guys, which player do you fire up for? All the guys we've heard in minor leagues that are coming up here, which guy are you like most psyched to see get up to a Sox uniform?
Well, everything in baseball is kind of cyclical, and this is something where I haven't had an opportunity to see a lot of the guys like Jimenez and the other guys in Birdie who just came off Tommy John surgery. I've heard about a lot of guys down there. The most important thing is they're 21 and 22, and they're getting seasoned. The problem is, you know, when you go to the minor leagues, guys get hurt. Berger got hurt. That was a number one pick. Different guys get hurt, and they get hurt before they get here, so they're always set back a year. So I would have to say the guys I'm looking forward to is we need a better five-man rotation. I don't know what it's going to be. You've got some great arms in Hanson. You got Birdie as maybe a reliever, a closer throws 100 mile an hour. Cease, the guy we got from the Cubs, stands out. Kopech really stands out as an ace of a ball club. Again, I would rather see the arms come up here before the everyday players, because I think you can really go out and trade some of your top minor league players for good major league players at important positions. Pitching, if you can develop it and they're young, that's the best thing you can do. So that, to me, is the strength of the minor league system. Even though we do have some everyday players down there, that are going to be pretty good, Harry. But those are the guys you'd move when you're making a trade to solidify your club. Like the Cubs got Lester. We might have to go get somebody in a year or two to fill that void, and that's going to take minor league players.
Right. It's just like the way the Red Sox got Chris Sale.
Just how you do it. So it's exactly what you have to do.
Right. Trade for that was, of course, a trade, not a free agent, but yeah, that's what you got to do.
White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carmen. We're talking to the great Belton, Bill Melton. Melty, do you know there are four players in White Sox history, four third basemen, that have hit 30 home runs in a season? You're, of course, one of them. Can you name the other three?
I think I hit 33. Ventura hit 34. I think it was Todd Frazier passed, and I don't know who the fourth one was. It wasn't Joe Creedy. You know, I don't know. I got three of them.
2006, Joe Creedy, Melty, but you're the only guy that's done it twice.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I should get a raise, Harry.
You should. I don't know who your agent is. Dude.
I'm not worried about it. You know what? I when I had that T-shirt day the other day, that was a nice compliment by the White Sox. That kind of meant a lot to me right there. And, you know, that's about all you need. I've been here a long time. That's 50 years since my first at-bat in Yankee Stadium, and then I've been with the White Sox 40 years. I think that means more to me than anything. You can stay with an organization for 40 years. I signed when I was 17, and I'm still with the White Sox. I mean, how many guys can walk through a dream like that for 40-some years? So whatever happened, whatever I did, whatever I accomplished, you know, I'm proud of it because I worked really hard to do it. I wasn't a ball player in high school. I wasn't a ball player in college. I didn't pick up a baseball except for on a Saturday. And to move up the ladder that quick, listening to coaching and stuff, I'm more proud of that, I think, than anything.
Well, you wouldn't be around this long, Melty, if you weren't a great contributor both on and off the field for the club. So it's not an accident. Hey, what would you tell Carson Fulmer going down if he called you up and said, "Hey, Melty, what are you seeing? How do I get back up here and be better?"
Well, the rope was out. It was long. I knew it two starts ago. We talk about a lot that, you know, because he's a number one pick, he's getting a little bit of harder look in the transition of a ball club to a younger ball club. That actually, if this was a stronger ball club, he'd have probably been out of here maybe two or three starts ago, because you can't, it's hard at the major league level when you run into this kind of trouble with mechanics to straighten them out and have confidence. You can talk about having confidence, but actually having it, you understand you're letting down a lot of your players that are playing behind you, and that wears on you more probably than anything. So I think the best move after three starts like this is to get him down there and forget about what happened over the last 2 months. Apparently he needs to work on something. I don't, something in his delivery, something in his rhythm. He's got to throw strikes, because the last three games, you didn't know, you couldn't tell if his arm was hurting him or he was a nervous wreck. You just couldn't tell. But when you see all that added together, when you look at him to help him out and better him, you have to send him out and put him down. It's not a demotion. I think the best thing I read today in the paper, it's a correction. I think Ricky Renteria said that, and I have to agree with that. It is a correction, and it's really now up to him. It's going to be harder to get back here. But when he comes back, if he's here, he'll be better than when he left.
What are you seeing from Lucas Giolito, who's also having trouble finding the strike zone?
But he's
been able to fight his way through starts. Like last week against the Cubs, he was atrocious in the first inning, couldn't find the plate, but then he's able to right himself and get into the sixth inning.
Well, I still think it's too many walks. You can't always be in trouble. You can't be working from the stretch every inning, every day, every start. Now, Lucas Giolito is second in all of baseball in walks. He's first in the American League. I mean, it's surprising me. He doesn't throw his curveball for strikes, and when he does, you can't hit it. And I was talking to a scout from the Nationals last night, a guy I knew, and he talked about he was kind of surprised Giolito was all over the place like this. But again, he's almost like Fulmer. You have to correct yourself. He's getting another opportunity. And you're right, he fights out of trouble, but you can't be in trouble all the time at the major league level, because sooner or later they're going to start just sitting on a certain pitch and it's going to be really tough on you. So the guy that really stands out for us is Lopez. Does he walk people?
Yep.
Yeah, 3 and 4, but he's always around the plate. These other guys are bouncing in the dirt. If Giolito has his curveball, that's his out pitch, but he has to have it. Because if you keep bouncing in the dirt and throwing it wide and not even throwing it for a strike, the hitter only has to wait for a fastball in the strike zone, and that's generally when you start lighting him up.
Melty, let's talk about walks on the offensive side of the ball. Hold on. Matt Davidson last year. Matt Davidson, 118 games, he only walked a total of 19 times. He's got 38 games this year and already 25 walks. And I know you and Carm both know that he averages seeing the most pitches, it's over five, every at-bat in all of baseball. So what has made the difference in Matt Davidson's approach inside the batter's box?
I think it's a mental approach, and I think he understands that. The second time around, big league year right here, and he saw what his correction needed. He was swinging a lot of sliders in the dirt. If you'll notice, most pitchers get White Sox hitters out by throwing bad pitches, and we're very aggressive, so we're swinging way too early. What he's doing is when you get a count 0-1 or 0-2, he's not afraid anymore to get behind. And now the walking part of it is that's just, to me, more exposure and understanding more the some guys on the mound that you may have saw last year, but he's being more selective. When he starts going to right center field, he's got as good as power as anybody, and I think by doing that, it's allowing him to wait a little bit longer, and I think that's maturity. That's just simply making a major adjustment, and this is a guy that could hit 35 or 40 home runs in today's game if he plays every day at first or every day at third, or he DHs enough at bats. Being selective, Harry, is the fact that you're now seeing the ball better and not afraid to lay off of pitches just because you get behind in the count. It's all about confidence.
Bill Melton, top 20 homers 5 times when he's wearing a White Sox uniform right now on White Sox Weekly, just for the record, getting that out there.
And those were the red caps with the red pinstripes.
Melty, real quick, do you remember playing in a old-timers game at Wrigley Field when you were 45 years old?
That's not when I hit a home run off of Ferguson Jenkins on the Waveland, is it, Harry? I went out on a Waveland at 45 years old. What does that tell you about that ballpark?
Really? Really, Melty?
Think about it.
The Shrine?
The Shrine. I see him all the time. He lives in Arizona, too. But I make sure Fergie understands that. Who cares about your 25-20 win seasons, man? I took you deep. I was 45 years old. I've had batting practice for 8 years.
Just stepped into the box at Wrigley at 45, bombing balls out on a Waveland. Melty was.
I believe he had 6 seasons in a row with 20 wins. Hey, Melty, I want to go back.
No.
I want to go back to the Bronx on that day in 1969 when a young Bill Melton gets his first ever career at-bat, Yankee Stadium. I know Bobby Mercer was on that team. Who Stottlemyre, who'd you face? What happened in that first?
I believe it was Stottlemyre. When I came up, I didn't know anybody because I was never in a major league camp. I only had 2.5 years in the minor leagues. I knew the names, you know, Gary Peters, Horland, all that, Pete Ward and stuff, but I never knew the players because I was never in a major league camp. So I was a wreck when I walked in that clubhouse. I didn't know what to expect. You know, here's a young guy that I didn't know anybody. They certainly didn't know anything about me because you didn't have social media. You didn't have all this coverage, and I think it was more nerve-wracking than anything, and it's hard to remember your first at-bat. I remember the concentration. I'm not really sure. You know, you don't see players' faces. You don't see numbers. You don't realize who's on the mound. It's just, you make sure you don't swing at bad pitches, and you don't want to strike out. That was always a fear the first time up. So once you get, by that first at-bat, and then you realize you either suck or you're okay, you can stick around for 30 days. They sent me back down and said, hey, you're not even an outfielder. Learn how to play third base. Then when I came back up in September, because I got traded to the Yankees or lent over in Syracuse, I was more comfortable because I walked in the clubhouse and I knew everybody. You know what I mean? I felt comfortable there. I wasn't there because I was some stud in the minor leagues. I was just there because I was good enough to be a position player with the White Sox. And again, knowing the players, it's very intimidating when you don't know anybody. It's like almost like getting traded when they didn't have social media where everybody has Facebook and they know each other and all this coverage. When you get traded and you walk in a clubhouse, you really don't know anybody, just the guys in the major league level. But you don't know about their minor league system. You don't know anything. So you feel kind of uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, you know, just kind of you relax after maybe a few days, few at bats.
Melty, thank you so much for the time. Congrats on 50 years. We love listening to you, watching you, and we hope to talk to you soon. So thanks so much.
Appreciate it. See you, Harry.
I'll see you around the ballpark, Melty. You be good.
Bill Melton.
See you later.
Bill Melton with us on White Sox Weekly. I didn't know you guys were that tight.
Oh, we're tight.
I love it. All right.
Quick time. He was my favorite player when I was a kid.
Quick time out. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Cool opportunity tomorrow before the ball. Did you ever go out and get pictures with major leaguers back in the day, Harry?
Isn't that cool? No, I mean, you couldn't.
We would
go with our programs and we'd hang over the railing. I was hungover when I was like 10. We would hang over the railing and, you know, we would say, hey, how about an autograph? How about an autograph? And, you know, that's what you did. But now, I mean, now, boy, the world is your oyster.
Right. Well, you can go tomorrow to the children's autograph session. Yolmer Sanchez is going to be there, Adam Engel, Jose Rondon, Chris Beck, all available before the game. You come on out 11:15 on a Sunday, get to meet your White Sox players, you get an autograph. Super cool, right? I love that look. So there's four players this Sunday who I just read off for you. So go on out before the game tomorrow. If you got a young guy who wants to meet some White Sox, Yolmer will be there, Beck will be there, Engel will be there, Rondon will be there. Love that type of stuff. All right, coming up after 5 o'clock, we're going to have the White Sox director of scouting, Nick Hostetler, is going to be here. The draft is coming up, and we'll get an update on all the minor leagues as well. That is next, 720 WGN.
WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
5:06. Hope you're having a great Saturday. My name is Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynowitz. It's White Sox Weekly till the bottom of the hour. Andy Mazur has your pregame show at 5:35 as the White Sox get ready to take on the Texas Rangers game 3 of the 4-game set. Nick Hostetler, the White Sox director of scouting with us, one of my favorite people to talk to. Nick, welcome back to WGN. It's a busy time for you, the draft right around the corner, and I figured you'd just tell everybody who the White Sox are picking today. I mean, June 4th's right here. You might as well just put it out there.
Might as well. I'll just go home then, right? I'll give Mark and Harry, I'll give you guys what I'm thinking, and we can just send it in and just sit back and kick our feet up.
do you have, for real, Nick, do you think you have a way that you know it will go with the top three, or is it kind of, well, we really don't know what's going to happen in front of us?
Well, we've got a pretty good idea, I think, at this point. I spent the night last night with one of the games I was at with a couple of the people that are picking in front of us, their scouting director and one of their GMs, and we talked a little bit. You know, they're not going to give you anything hard that you think is 100% accurate, but they'll drop hints there, here or there. And you know, look, we're all friends in this. We all kind of take care of each other. You know, the last thing we want to do is lie to each other and do something like that. So there's a chance we all end up working with each other at some point. We're going to need each other. But, you know, we kind of talk back and forth. I got a pretty good idea how it's going to go and who's going to be there when we pick it for.
That's so friendly. Look at that. Like the Tigers, the Giants, and the Phillies, just all, hey, like we're going to take him. Oh, so that means that we're going to go there and then you're going to go here.
Yeah, but that night, Nick's going to be like that SOB.
there's no question there is. Yeah, it'll all change about 2 hours before the draft. You'll start hearing a bunch of rumors and you start freaking out and coming up with plan B and C, and then it all comes back to where you thought it would be about 2 weeks before the draft.
Now, the White Sox have been on sort of a college roll with the draft lately, and I know that you were directly involved with Rodon and with Carson Fulmer. Is your philosophy best player? Do you lean towards a high school talent, towards a college talent? How do you approach that?
You know, when you're picking this high in the draft to pick 4, one of the last things you're going to do is draft for any sort of need, any sort of you know, the thing that maybe you feel that your organization needs at that point. But best player available can be defined in so many different ways. You know, I think the better term for what we try to do is the best fit for our organization. and not necessarily as far as position. It may mean just how the guy's tools play, what type of arm action a pitcher may have, what type of swing a hitter may have, the ceiling that they may have, the floor that they may have. You know, you've got to find the right fit for your organization. And I think I liken it a little bit to the NFL with some of the guys in the schemes that some of the defenses run that, you know, they might not be perfect fits for some of the NFL teams. And that's kind of the way it is for us. There's certain guys that are going to be better fits for better organizations. And that's kind of how we look at it. We're going to take the guy that we feel best fits our organization and our development strengths.
Let's roll through the minor leagues here, Nick. So we have you on until 8 o'clock tonight. We're actually not going to broadcast the game. Go through all your tips.
You're going to have a lot of listeners log off and stop listening to me by then. I can promise you that.
That's okay. Me and Harry are locked in. That's all that really matters. All right. So Dane Dunning gets the bump up to Double A. Last night he wasn't his best night. 4 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs. We'll get to the outstanding performance from Michael Kopech and Dylan Cease last night in a second. But what was Dane doing so well at Winston-Salem that you guys saw it and are like, you know what, he's ready to go up to Double A?
You know, I'll be honest with you, and I'll start off by saying this, just full disclosure here. I have not spent too much time watching many of our minor leaguers of late, just because, as you guys could probably expect, I've been fully focused on the draft. And
Yeah. With
that coming close, it's important that I do that. But Getsy and I talk often. Jeremy Haber and I talk often. So I've got a pretty good handle on what's going on. But, you know, Dane has been, and he started out in Winston-Salem, similar to the way he did at Kannapolis last year, pounding the strike zone, showing 4-plus pitches, competing and doing those things at Winston. Getsy and Rick and Jeremy had the idea of starting him out similar to what we did last year at Kannapolis and giving him some chance at Winston-Salem to have some success. And he did that and moved up to Double A, had a couple good starts. And like, as you said, last night wasn't his best. But the one thing about Dane Dunning is usually those types of things, they don't bug him at all. He kind of lets it just roll off his back. And I'm pretty confident the next time he takes the ball, you'll see a pretty solid outing out of him.
Let me just jump back to a draft question here, and I'm super excited to see Dane in person one of these days this summer, along with a bunch of other players. Okay, you have the 4th pick in the draft, Nick, and you have the 6th highest bonus pool, which is a little over $10.5 million. Can you explain just to the standard baseball fan this bonus pool and how it works, and if you overdraft players or underdraft players, and how you have to work that money?
Yeah, it's a it's something that we actually have two people assigned. Dan Fabian is one of them that is assigned to nothing but paying attention to making sure that I don't spend too much money and get Mr. Reinsdorf angry at me. So we try to make sure we keep under the threshold of what we're allowed to spend. There's obviously penalties if you go over up to 4.9%. You have to pay a tax. After that, you have to forfeit a pick. But you've got to be careful how you manage your bonus pool. You know, I've said it a few times now that while picking high is obviously something that, you know, we're going to get a good player out of, having a huge bonus pool is probably more conducive to having successful drafts than even where you're picking. Some of these teams like Kansas City, I think Tampa, they have pretty large bonus pools with the extra picks. And being able to manipulate and maneuver your money essentially gives you an opportunity to add multiple impact-type players in the draft. So, you know, you may be able to take a player, let's say, at pick 4, and you pay him under what the slot suggests. You can then redistribute that money throughout the rest of your draft as long as you don't go over your allotted pool for Major League Baseball. So it's something that we have, over the course of the last probably 4 or 5 years that it's been in place, we've used. We've overplayed the likes of Corey Zangari, Luis Curbelo, players like that we we valued higher than where we picked. So we were able to save money places and then redistribute it to players like that later in the draft.
And the reason you would do that is like, okay, this kid is most likely going to go to college, but we're going to draft him here in the 6th or 7th or whatever round. And hey, we're offering you way more money than you would ever get down here, and it would make it, you know, perhaps make them change their mind. Is that the reason you would do that?
Similar to that, yeah. There's sometimes that is the process that goes through it. You know, a lot of these kids, and I'll openly say this, a lot of these high school kids, they're not ready to go out and play professional baseball. It is, at 18 years old, that's a big big chunk of your life that you're giving up to go play professional baseball. And the ones that we do identify as ready, not only physically but mentally, to handle the rigors of it, we target and go after guys like those guys that had fell and slipped, and that we offered that money to. It's something that, you know, they may just want to go out. They may want to go play. They may be ready for it. And when they are ready for it, and we feel that, you know, their tools match up with what our valuations are and how much, at the time, how much money we're able to offer them, it's an opportunity, win-win for both. And I feel really confident that with those players I just mentioned and a couple of the other ones we did, that we've got some really good upside players. I think Curbelo is one of them you're going to hear from here in the near future when he finally gets up to Kannapolis, gets some at-bats under his belt. I think you're going to see why we liked him so much.
We're visiting with the man that will make the first pick for the White Sox on June 4th, and Nick Hostetler is ready to tell us, is it Joey Bart?
Yeah, the funny part about that is I got a text from one of our draft picks that we had a few years ago that asked me the same question. It's funny how the players that we just took are just as interested. They know all of these guys. So I've actually checked with a few of them on how they liked them, if they were teammates with them and stuff like that. So it's been good. Look, Joey's a special talent. There's no question about that. Whoever ends up getting him in the draft is going to be very pleased with his ability to not only catch and throw, but always the power he also has.
Yeah, he's a catcher for the Yellow Jackets. You know, basketball's down to 2 rounds. Football's down to 7 rounds. Baseball still has like 2,700 rounds of picking. How does that? I mean, you must have, you know, so many guys that are just under you. How is it possible to delegate and have all the information and still be able to make the final call?
Well, I'll say this, and I truly mean this. This isn't just blowing smoke. I have one of the best staffs and support systems that you could ask for as a scouting director. My two national guys, Mike Shirley and Nathan Durst, are out of this world. They're some of the best in the game. My regional cross-checkers are outstanding as well as our area guys. And, you know, for me, they're really easy to have confidence in. I know that they can evaluate. I know they work hard. I know they spend as many nights as I do on the road away from their wives and kids, and that makes it difficult for all of us. But at the same time, I really trust those guys, and we're all in this together. We're friends, and, you know, you care about each other. So I know they're out there working hard, and yeah, it's a little bit difficult sometimes to take your hands off the steering wheel and let guys do their jobs, but you really got to trust them. And I'll be honest, that's one of the things that I had a tough time doing my first couple of years as a director, is just letting guys do their jobs, not micromanaging, not, you know, trying to hover and tell them how they should feel about a player, and let them make up their own mind. And then, you know, I'll follow them in, get an evaluation, and we'll go from there. But it is a daunting task running through 40 rounds. I think this year we have 906 players that are turned in by our scouts for the draft. So going through all of that paperwork, going through, I could sit here and talk for an hour on the people that contribute to this that means so much to let us have the ability to make these picks. And they truly are the ones that help me and lets me just focus on making the actual pick.
So your Midwest cross checker, Nick, is Garrett Guest. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And so then you mentioned your national guys, Mike Shirley and Nathan Durst. So I got Guest, Shirley, Durst all in a room. Who wins that argument on a player?
That's a good one. They're so different. Their personalities are so different. Garrett's father owns South Oak Dodge. I know I gave a little plug there. But he's got a little used car salesman in him. So I get that. And Mike is a coach at heart and a developer. So I get a little bit of the coaching angle. And Nathan's kind of my quiet assassin. When Nathan gives me his opinion, it's usually straight to the point, and I know it's like there's not any appetizers or dessert with it. It's just the meat and potatoes. So, boy, that, you know what, I'd have to say that's a tough call. The good part is they're all three very close, so they usually tend to have similar opinions. I'm usually the tiebreaker in all of it, so I just skirted around that question
very well,
very good, without offending any of them, didn't I?
Yeah. before you go here, Carson Fulmer is a guy obviously that you care a lot about. You have a lot of faith in. What are you hoping for Carson as he goes down to AAA here and sort of finding himself and then getting back to the big leagues? What are you seeing as much as you've watched him?
You know, it's, we're all human beings in this, and this is one thing that I've said over and over is that the human element in this, sometimes the fans, even ourselves, we lose track of that. We lose the idea of that. You know, Carson is, like you said, an unbelievable kid, an unbelievable person, and you want nothing but success. But, you know, you watch him and you watch his struggles, and, you know, I think we all need to take a step back, and I think Aaron Rodgers said it best, the relax comment he made a few years back. But, you know, this kid is young, and a lot of these kids have never failed. You know, they come from the best colleges in the country, the best high schools in the country, where they have been the man. They dominate. And so when they get to the big leagues, and that's what development is about. You know, you get to the big leagues and you fail, and you see how you react to that. The big thing here for Carson is going to be how he reacts to the failure, how he bounces back. Is he able to control the emotional part of it? And really put his best foot forward as far from a physical tools part of it. We have no question that the makeup is tremendous, and he has his desire and passion to win and be the best is there. It's just a matter of him understanding and learning how to harness his emotions, understand how to use them in his favor, and not let them become a detriment to what he's trying to do on the mound.
So when you go out to dinner, like with your wife and friends, is there pressure on you to get the wine right? Because, like, if you can pick out of 900 players, you should be able to pick out of 30 bottles of wine.
Yeah, Nick.
I'm not a wine drinker, so that helps. My wife is. I am not. You know what's funny is, and she will admit this, and I don't know if she's listening or not, but she will admit this wholeheartedly, I hate making decisions. I hate choosing where we eat. I hate choosing where we eat. I hate choosing what we're eating, when we're eating. We argue about it constantly. I always go back, hey, I have to make decisions every day in my job. The last thing I want to do is make another one when I'm home. So we argue with it and usually put it off on either my daughters, Kayla or Lacey, or my son, Andrew. They usually are the ones that have to make the call on it.
I am following Lacey's volleyball via your Twitter, Nick, just so you know.
Yeah.
It's congrats on her success. It's awesome how supportive you are as a dad. If you're doing that on Twitter, it's got to be a lot more in person actually being the dad. But it's cool to see that you put that stuff out there. And thank you, by the way, for joining us for the record.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. I'm actually going to leave here a game I'm at and drive to try to see my oldest daughter, Kayla, play tomorrow in the morning and get back home for a day. But I appreciate it. Love being on with you guys, Mark and Harry. I appreciate all the kind words. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Nick. Best of luck with the draft. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Nick Haas, other director of scouting for your Chicago White Sox. Hey, Sox fans, back by popular demand, Chicago White Sox are offering a limited edition cancer ribbon White Sox cap for $29.99. $10 from every cap sold will support White Sox charities and Rush University Medical Center and cancer research. I'm sure everybody knows somebody who could use some dollars for cancer research. Caps are available in the park and at the Chicago Sports Depot for a limited time. You can get your hat today. Join the team for a great cause.
Sox fans, book your group of 25 people in the CIBC Fan Box. The Fan Box is the only suite located on the lower level concourse behind Section 134, providing the benefits of lower level sight lines with the luxury of a premium suite. For more information, call 312-674-1000 or visit whitesox.com.
Get you set for the White Sox and the Rangers. Tonight, wrap up White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.